This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning from our Huntley studios where my thermometer says 36 degrees this morning and a pretty good couple of days ahead, as you've heard. So anyway, welcome to the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong and I look forward to getting together with you every Saturday morning between 5 and 6 o'clock. To talk about the most basic industry in the country, in the world. If we can't produce food, if we can't eat, nothing else happens. So, as I said, we'll be talking a little bit about names that are being tossed out, Secretary of Agriculture, and we'll take a look at a pretty good week in the markets this 3.5-day trading week that's Thanksgiving. Keep in mind, of course, Thanksgiving is only a U.S. holiday, so other markets around the world are open, but generally very little happens when U.S. markets are closed. Then the death of Fidel Castro brings back some memories for yours truly, and we might find time to talk about some of the things that happened when he moved in as the new leader of Cuba. What he did and what we did, and Uncle Bobby and I traveled with Governor Ryan to Cuba back in 1999 and actually broadcast, I think, 4 mornings in a row from Havana on Cuban radio. Originated our broadcasts in their studios back here on WGN. So may find time to talk a little bit more about that, too, because I did meet the man. Did shake hands with him, and I thought at the time, if we're going to wait for him to no longer be well and guiding the country, we're going to wait a long time because he was an imposing figure, really. So all of that, but as I said, we're going to talk farm tires this morning, and we'll be visiting with Mr. Rogers of Firestone. When we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Firestone is a name that's been around forever, Firestone Tires, but let's talk about Firestone involvement in the agricultural industry. Tom Rogers joins us to do that, and well over a century we have been putting Firestone tires on cars, but that has changed a little bit, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
And what are we doing agriculturally today?
Well, we're trying to carry bigger and bigger machines and heavier machines and do it with less pressure.
And you have a technology that's called AD2. Talk to me about that.
Advanced Deflection Design is our branding for our newest technology. And again, the AD2 is an industry standard, AD2 is our industry standard of IF or VF. And again, carrying more load with less pressure is the key there.
Well, it seems that pressure is really the key to maintaining tires and doing what you should do agriculturally.
Pressure is definitely the key. Too much pressure and you're really allowing a machine to underperform or not optimizing its performance. An underinflated tire and not maintaining enough pressure is shortening the life of the tire and going to cause you expense down the road.
So how do you get that pressure set properly?
So the biggest thing is understanding your machine load. Right. The weight of the machine, the axle weights, proper ballasted machine, and setting the pressures based on those loads for the given tire size you have. Again, that's going to optimize the tractor's performance.
How active is the Firestone dealer in working with a farmer to do that?
Our Firestone certified farm tire dealers are critical to the farmer's success. And that service element that the farmer needs when he does have a problem or to understand how to properly set up a machine, that dealer can be there for him, and he's a key element to the success of that farmer.
And one of the keys is the fact that when you change a tractor tire or a combine or whatever, you don't do that at the gas station. So these dealers have to be able to go anywhere at any time.
Exactly. In-field service is critical. You're right. You know, unlike your car that you swing down and pull into the shop and the tire shop and they work on it, the tractor happens in the field, either where the problem is or because the machine's so big, clearly transporting it's not always ideal. So going to the farm and in-field service is critical for the dealer.
So what's ahead technology-wise for the agricultural tire business?
Well, size growth and again, tire size growth and really trying to carry these heavier machine loads is a critical element. And the new technologies of IF and VF and RAD2 technology really help do that. And again, at a lower pressure, carrying the same loads or heavier loads that allow for better traction and less compaction in the field.
Is radial a word that we use in farm tires?
Radial is definitely the word and the word for these larger machines. Bias technology was original and has been around a long time and still is very useful. But radial is what really carries the load and carries it at a lower pressure.
So where can people get more information on Firestone and what you can do for them?
So our website probably is the easiest place, yeah. FirestoneAg.com, and as well the dealer. Go to your dealer. Everybody has a local dealer in their area, and the dealer is a great resource.
Tom Rogers with Firestone talking about the importance that tractor tires and other equipment tires play in the role of agriculture today. We're at about 35, 36 degrees this morning, and it's 16 minutes after 5 o'clock. We're going to talk to Ron Moore with the American Soybean Association when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Ron Moore from Roseville, Illinois, is vice president of the American Soybean Association and, like most other commodity groups, wondering what might happen under a Trump administration. So I'm going to start with that, Ron, and say, what do you think will impact agriculture under the Trump administration?
Well, hopefully the comments that Mr. Trump made during the campaign about doing away with the waters of the U.S., his support for the renewable fuels standard, making sure that we have the tools necessary as farmers to produce food for the country and the world. You know, we're very hopeful that even if his campaign discussion about the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership, if he's not going to have that passed during the first few days of his presidency, we'll have an opportunity to talk to him about the benefits of the TPP. Mr. Trump is a businessman, and he understands what a return on investment is, and TPP is an investment in the future of the U.S. economy, and it's big benefit to the U.S. ag economy.
Did his discussion of breaking up NAFTA concern you?
It does. Yeah. You know, hopefully he'll take a look at it as president and maybe make some side agreements with Mexico or on NAFTA and side agreement with Japan on the TPP. And instead of renegotiating of each of those agreements, say we've made a side agreement that makes this trade pact better, and we'll continue to have NAFTA, and hopefully he'll support the TPP in Congress and with those additional side agreements.
Ron, do you have any ideas on who might be Secretary of Agriculture?
No, and there's a lot of smarter people than me that kind of tried to pick the election, and they were wrong.
Yeah.
So for me to make any speculation on Secretary of Ag, I don't have any names, but I have what I think would be a good skill set, someone who is a farmer or is involved in production agriculture that understands what farmers need from their Department of Agriculture and where that they need to take the new farm bill as we go into those kind of discussions in the future. You know, put farmers first instead of other interests.
We have for years watched the soybean yield sort of hit a plateau and not move above it until this year.
Yeah.
Are you surprised at what we're seeing in the soybean production?
A little bit. We had very good yields where I live in western Illinois, but we've continued to have increases in our the best varieties that we've been able to purchase through our seed companies. And I give that a lot of credit to the seed companies for providing the genetics and the varieties that continue to withstand the stresses that the summer months give us as farmers, whether too much rain, too little rain, temperature variations, you know. But I haven't done anything different than I did the last 5 years, and we had extremely good soybean yields this year. Very, very satisfied.
But with more soybeans, we've got to work harder at selling it. Have you been surprised at Chinese buying that's continuing?
No, pleasantly surprised. Yeah. They are going to continue to buy soybeans to feed their animal agriculture. Yep. As their population moves into their middle class, they're going to continue to want to eat more of our diet, more meat, milk, and eggs instead of more rice. And so we have a great opportunity to export meat products and soybeans to those countries, and especially soybeans into China.
Talking domestically again, we watch this soybean producing area move north. Mm-hmm. Is that going to continue?
I think so. Yeah. You're starting to see some varieties of early maturing varieties in Canada as well. So
right.
I think that's a good thing. Farmers, given the right incentives, can produce a lot of stuff. And, you know, we've had good incentives over the last decade, and we're going to continue to produce food for people, and that's what we do. That's our job. We raise food.
And you do it well. I remember the food versus fuel debate, and farmers quickly put that one to rest.
Yes, yeah. You know, we can do both.
Yep.
And we've proven that we can do both, and we'd like to see higher prices right now, but, you know, we've got a good product out there, both in soybeans and corn and wheat and sorghum. You know, farmers are doing a very good job of producing food.
Final question, renewable futures, or the renewable energy mm-hmm. future, pretty bright?
I think it is. You know, where would we be in all of our commodity markets without the renewable fuel standard? I don't think we'd have the profitability in agriculture that we have. And when farmers are successful, Main Street businesses are successful, the input suppliers, the retailers, the people that we do business with, are successful, and the consuming public is successful too, because they have the lowest cost of consuming food or purchasing food for their families, and it's still safe and nutritious.
And when farmers make money, they spend it.
We spend it. You bet. Yeah. We had $15 beans a few years ago, and I replaced two 20-year-old tractors and a 10-year-old pickup truck. So, you know, we're looking for those kind of times again.
Thank you for joining us. A visit with Ron Moore, Vice President of the American Soybean Association from Roseville, Illinois. We're at 24 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and continuing the discussion on biofuels and renewable energy. The U.S. government Wednesday issued final requirements for biofuel use for next year, saying that energy companies must boost the amount of renewables in the nation's fuel supply, in a move that, of course, drew praise from the biofuel sector, corn growers, and soybean producers after years of criticism. But basically, what the EPA did is they followed the rules laid down by Congress. The Environmental Protection Agency, in a statement, set the target for total renewable fuel use at 19,280,000,000 gallons for the year 2017. Now, that includes 15 billion gallons for conventional biofuel, which is mainly corn-based ethanol, and 4,280,000,000 gallons for the advanced biofuels mandate. And the final plan is up from the 18.8 billion gallons the EPA proposed in May. It marks a 6% increase from this year's 18.1 billion gallons. And while many anticipated an increase for the conventional fuel target, that increase alongside the boost for advanced biofuels was more than many expected. But again, it was following the rules laid down by Congress back in 2007 on the amount of renewable energy that should be included in our energy supply here in the U.S. One other note, the Illinois Corn Growers Association this week voted to install new officers and board members at their organizational meeting. And Justin Durdan, a farmer from Utica, was elected president of the Illinois Corn Growers. He'll be joined in the leadership roles, Vice President Aaron Carlson of Winnebago, Treasurer Grant Noland of Decatur, and Secretary Mike Homerding of Plainfield, Illinois. And that was at the reorganizational meeting of the Illinois Corn Growers Association. A lesson again this week of why we should live every day as though it's our last day on the planet. It was a sad day for me earlier this week when word came in that Tom Strakota, who you heard many times here on WGN Radio doing the commercials for his company, Dairyland Seeds in West Bend, Wisconsin, and word came that he died Monday of a heart attack in West Bend. Tom was only 63 years old and became a mover and a shaker in the seed industry beyond his company because they headquartered in West Bend. And Tom began his career working in the family business at Dairyland Seed alongside his parents. While raising their four children, he served as CEO for over 20 years, and his leadership helped Dairyland Seed become a world-class plant breeding organization. 63 years old, heart attack, Tom Strakota, Dairyland Seeds, West Bend, Wisconsin. And as we look ahead now, we're pretty well through with crop reports. Until January, we've come through the November crop report, and the corn and soybean crops, indeed, at this point, will be an all-time record, which once again goes back to the brief conversation on food versus fuel that Ron Moore and I talked about a few minutes ago. Give farmers the financial incentive, and they'll find a way to produce food and fuel and a lot of other products from these corn and soybean fields across the Midwest. And a friend of mine last night, we had dinner at Jameson's, of course, where else? But anyway, a friend of mine said, why am I seeing fields of corn not harvested yet? And, you know, it's not unusual some years to see corn being harvested in snow in January and February, but sometimes it's just a case of having the time to get it all done. But the other point is you have to have a moisture level right around 14% in that kernel of corn so that it doesn't mold, it doesn't spoil. And you can do that two ways. You can buy expensive propane and do it that way, or you can let Mother Nature do it with drier weather and sunshine. And so probably some of both in those cornfields that you still see standing around the Midwest. Well, we'll talk markets, and we'll talk a little bit more about Cuba and the passing of Fidel Castro and what happened agriculturally when he took over the island nation of Cuba. Right here on Chicago's very own WGN Radio and WGNRadio.com. And here in Huntley, Illinois, at our studios, it's about 36 degrees this morning. Thank you, Roger, for the update on news. We're at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. And we say welcome to Samuelson Says. I'm Orion, and the folks at Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947, sponsor this segment. We say thank you. And this morning, we'll be talking about giving thanks from a farm couple in Illinois. But before we do that, It's holiday time. And at the Samuelson House, we're getting ready for the holidays, as most of you are. We're expecting lots of visitors. So the last thing we want to worry about is plumbing problems. We'll be sure to have a bottle of Wink Hair Clog Blaster handy to keep our bathroom drains running clean, safe on all pipes and septic systems. Wink Hair Clog Blaster pours through running, standing water, breaking down hair and soap scums. Check out all of the fine products, the fine products of Wink.com. Again, that's WHINK.com. Regardless of where we live in the United States, whether it be on a farm, a ranch, or in town, most of us have a great deal for which to be thankful this Thanksgiving Day weekend. I know I certainly do, but I want to share, Samuelson says, this week with a farm couple from Illinois, John and Kendra Smiley, who write the home front column for Prairie Farmer magazine. And they give 12 reasons for their family to be thankful this Thanksgiving weekend. Let me share these 12 thoughts with you. Kendra starts by writing, number one, living on a farm where neighbors know what cars belong in the lane and are willing to check if anything looks suspicious. Number two, raising kids who didn't have to be quiet in the yard. Number three, having friends who know we're gone and are willing to drive in and out of the lane after a snowstorm so no unauthorized person will know we're not home. Number four, being able to hang laundry on the line while underdressed. Number five, spending time with folks who knew our kids and expected them to behave. Number six, having extended family nearby to encourage our boys. Number seven, knowing the names of everyone I worship with at church on Sunday. Then John writes numbers 8 through 10. He says, number 8, not having to allow extra time for traffic as I travel to the field or elevator or home for lunch. Number 9, a gravel road near our home where I'm able to jog or leisurely walk right down the middle with very little interference. Number 10, wide open spaces where our kids and now our grandkids can safely play. And then Kendra concludes the 12 reasons. Number 11, being an important part of the farm operation, even though that was never on my bucket list. And number 12, John's patience with me and his willingness to play the thankful game, if only for numbers 8 through 10. Thank you, John and Kendra Smiley, for your reasons for giving thanks. And thanks to Prairie Farmer magazine that has been serving the agricultural industry for 175 years. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. Yes, 175 years for Prairie Farmer magazine, which started its life in downtown Chicago before moving out to the suburbs. But Prairie Farmer is the longest running publication of any kind that has made it 175 years without interruption. So congratulations. We have a lot of friends at Prairie Farmer and the other farm magazines that are in that Prairie Farmer family. And, of course, WLS, before it became the rock and roll station of the nation, was WLS, the Prairie Farmer station. And the National Barn Dance that started stars like Pat Buttram and Gene Autry and George Gobel and Bob and Bobby Thomas and Bob Atcher and all of those names were part of the Prairie Farmer family. So happy 178th to you. 20 minutes before 6 o'clock, and we're going to check in with Max and his guest when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Orion Samuelson here, and you know I buy my vehicles from the Gary Lang Auto Group. If you want to drive a sleek and stylish new Buick, buy it from a dealer you can trust. Go to Gary Lang Buick during their Black Friday sales event now through the end of November. Not only will you receive red carpet treatment, you will receive significant savings off your new Buick's MSRP. For example, save 20% off on the new 2016 Enclave, Encore, Regal, or Verano. Don't just take my word for it. Experience Gary Lang Buick's difference with the most knowledgeable and friendly sales associates with the largest savings on remaining 2016 Buicks during Gary Lang's Black Friday sales event going on now. Visit GaryLangAuto.com and view their entire inventory 24/7. And remember, if it doesn't say Gary Lang on the back, you probably paid too much.
We always welcome in Brian Basting when he's in town to come into our studio here, and we get a little bit of an update, and we see what's happening, what's changing in the commodity landscape. Our big piece of guidance came in that November crop report a few days ago, and it was sobering because they were big numbers. So what are you watching now, Brian?
Well, it's always good to be with you, Max, but right now the attention with the U.S. harvest pretty much in the bin now is to South America. What's going on with their planting progress? And actually, some of the soybeans in northern Brazil this year are much further along than they were a year ago. So a wide divergence in terms of crop development down there in South America, but market will be watching that very closely.
They got off to a pretty good start, the way it appears. Is that correct?
Yeah, last year, Max, in northern Brazil, it was dry, so the soybeans got planted later, and that pushed back the double crop corn and raised some issues there. This year, there was plenty of moisture there. That soybeans in northern Brazil are off to a very good start.
While we're on the subject, let's talk about the currency there and its relationship with our very strong dollar and perhaps a signal that it might send to the South American farmers.
A very important point, Max. What happened is the Brazilian real, the currency, has weakened considerably versus the U.S. dollar after the U.S. election. Now, that means stronger domestic commodity prices in Brazil, including corn. And that's important because double crop corn in Brazil will not be planted until January and February. So, in effect, the Brazilian farmers got a spike in the price of their corn. And that's going to encourage, weather permitting, more corn acres in Brazil this year for that double crop.
In terms of the soybean acreage, the die has already been cast. I mean, there probably aren't many additional bean acres that will go in, you're saying, and the response will be in that, what they call that safrinha crop?
That's correct. The soybeans are planted, but that safrinha crop can really spike up here, again, weather permitting. But last year, that planting for safrinha was pushed back because of the delayed soybean harvest. But if the soybean harvest is finished early this year, that could encourage earlier planting of that safrinha crop this year. And with good weather, we could see a tremendous rebound, potentially, in that double crop corn in Brazil this year.
Has that been reflected in the corn futures market?
Well, it's something that's in the background, but I think right now the market is so early. Of course, that crop won't be planted until January, but there is some, at least a little bit of concern about some dryness in southern Brazil right now. And southern Brazil corn is in various stages of growth. Some of it's as late as pollination. Some of it's just been planted a few weeks ago, but a bit dry in southern Brazil.
So it bears watching, and for several weeks yet, as a matter of fact, what goes on in South American weather.
You bet. We're in a new weather season now, Max, as we get into December, and then we're looking at a weather season that's going to be comprised of first the single crop or full season corn in southern Brazil, the soybeans in northern Brazil, of course, critical growing season coming up here in December. And, of course, Argentina is just wrapping up planting, so it's going to be a long growing season yet in South America.
What else is going on around the world from a crop standpoint at this moment that bears watching?
We're seeing tremendous exports of soybeans at the moment. We're seeing weekly liftings of soybeans, 100 million bushels a week. Now, that's going to tail off a bit here into December. And if we see large crops of soybeans in Brazil and Argentina, that'll tail off rapidly in early 17. But for the time being, that's been underpinning the market. I think the other thing the market's watching is just the general tone in terms of the post-election. Are we going to see some inflation in the U.S., what the interest rates may be? But I guess all those are secondary factors I would emphasize in relation to what's going on in South America.
Well, talk about inflation for a moment. That would not be bad for commodity values, would it?
No. I think that longer term, I guess the concern may be that the trade issues. We're going to have to see how the trade posture, for lack of a better word, of the U.S. is with the new administration coming in. We don't know. We're going to have to see how, but trade is very important to the U.S. farmer, and we'll see how that evolves over time.
Some of the latest discussion that we saw this week was that President-elect Trump might not be inclined to throw out the North American Free Trade Agreement, but would be pushing for some significant revisions. That would make the corn producers a little bit nervous, would it not, given the fact that under NAFTA, corn has been treated fairly well, as I recall.
Yeah, and of course, Mexico is a major customer for U.S. corn, so there's no question that the corn market is going to be monitoring that closely moving forward. It's just a lot of unknowns, of course, at the moment as he bring in the new administration at the first of the year. But no question that the corn market has benefited in terms of Mexico being a primary customer.
I suppose it's an interesting academic discussion about just who will be running the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It doesn't matter that much to the commodity markets, does it?
I wouldn't think so. I think it policy-wise, though, looking longer term, that'll be an issue. But in terms of the markets day-to-day, probably not a big issue.
It's been argued by some that the EPA administrator may be a more important post in terms of an appointment. And when you think about ethanol policy, you know, that is something to keep in the back of your mind, I guess.
It certainly is. Ethanol has become a very strong component of corn demand here, using over 5 billion bushels a year to produce ethanol. Again, moving forward, I think that for the short term, it looks like ethanol is still a strong component in the fuel standard. But we just don't know, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road what it's going to look like. But for the short term, I think it's still going to be a strong component moving into 17.
What are producers doing in terms of marketing their crop right now? Have they stuck it away in the bin, locked up the bin for a while, and they're just waiting for some opportunity?
You know, the impression we get, Max, is that as you said, the 16 crop is safely tucked away. I would emphasize something to your listeners. The price of new crop soybeans, this is November 2017 soybeans, is the highest it's been since June of this year. So we're seeing that new crop November contract now over $10 a bushel. So maybe that's getting at least a little bit of attention out in farm country in the context of that's a pretty good price for new crop beans for next year. Particularly in view of what may be a record crop in South America. A lot of unknowns, of course, so we'd encourage everyone to consider flexibility in marketing. But the other thing that consideration is it seems like a larger percentage of 16 beans have been sold in comparison to 16 corn. So a lot of new crop or 16 corn out in the bin yet.
In terms of the global vegetable oil market, what has been going on there? We've seen some days, have we not, when soy oil has been providing some direction and some lift to the beans?
It seems to be that way. I think that there's been some weather issues with Malaysian palm oil, those types of things. Historically, the largest and the strongest rallies in the soybean market have been linked to soybean meal, but that doesn't mean that a soybean oil-led market can't be at least give some strength, and we're seeing that in the soybean market right now. So, yes, I would agree that the oil market is leading this bean market rally back above $10 again. Again, I think South America now takes the lead, but what are we going to see in terms of final production down there? But oil, for the last month or two, definitely has been a support to the bean market.
I recall many years ago I was in Indonesia and Malaysia. They were, at the time, big producers of palm oil. Is that still the case, that's where the palm oil comes from?
Yeah, that is still the case. And again, some weather issues moving forward here. The meteorologists will say that the La Nina pattern here perhaps is setting in, what influence that may or may not have on world weather trends, and that's something to watch moving into 17 also.
Well, it's many, many weeks till the planting of the corn crop in the United States, but what are you thinking, that the corn acreage will be diminished and soybean acreage will be increased, at least at this stage of the game?
It certainly appears that way. When you look at, for example, the relationship between November 2017 soybean futures and December 2017 corn at the moment, certainly favors soybeans. Now, a long way to go. Producers now, it seems like each year now, are maintaining more flexibility, i.e. they're not putting down anhydrous in the fall. So there's more flexibility in terms of making that decision in the spring. But for the time being, it looks like we could see a reduction in corn acres in 17 and a continued increase in beans.
What kind of chatter do you hear out there among the ag community members about lender discussions as farmers are sitting down with their lenders and some of them are anticipating these high costs of production versus the commodity price and they're looking at, for example, the cash rental rates?
The balance sheets in general, Max, are still strong for producers. I don't want to give that impression that the balance sheets have completely gone away, but they're not as strong as they were a couple years ago. I think that the lenders want to work very closely now with producers. What type of marketing plan do you have? How are you going to manage your operation? Just a little closer attention to detail, for lack of a better phrase, moving into 17 here.
So in summary, keep an eye on November 17 beans and December 17 corn futures for any opportunities that might be out there.
Yeah, and I think underlying the word opportunity, keep in mind that those crops obviously won't be planted for several months, so flexibility is important. But sometimes markets can give you opportunities when you least expect it, and this may be one of those times, particularly, again, in view of what could be some record crops of soybeans in South America and potentially a big rebound in corn production in Brazil.
Will there be some basis opportunities, you think, as well this winter, maybe transportation-related or something of that nature?
Yeah, it seems like there's every year there's something comes up, whether it be the river. I know the water levels right now on the river are quite low. But, yeah, there's always issues like that. If there's a harvest delay, perhaps, in Brazil, that could give the soybean export market a little longer window. Those things are always seeming to be popping up year in, year out.
Brian, come see us again sometime. Happy holidays to you and your colleagues and your family.
Always good to be with you, Max. Happy Thanksgiving to all your listeners, too.
Brian Basting, Advanced Trading, Bloomington, Illinois.
4 minutes before 6 o'clock news time, and speculation over who will be Secretary of Agriculture, as you heard in Max's conversation with Brian, continues. Probably the best list I've seen came from the website Politico. And some of the names in that article, well, first of all, Don Vilwalk, who farms in southwestern Indiana, is a good friend of Vice President-elect Mike Pence. And Don served as president of the Indiana Farm Bureau, made a run for the American Farm Bureau presidency last January, did not win that one, but his name has come forward in a possible secretary. And there are others, particularly with Mike Pence coming from Indiana, there are some other Indiana folks. Like Chuck Connor, president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, and he was in the Department of Agriculture about a decade ago. And Ted McKinney, current director of the Indiana Department of Agriculture, on the list, along with another Indiana farmer, Kip Thom, who ran for Congress, didn't make it this year. Also, Mike McCloskey, co-founder of Fair Oaks Farms. That's the large dairy and agritourism center on I-65 heading down to Indianapolis. Then Texas also coming up with some names. The state's former governor, Rick Perry, and the current ag secretary, Sid Miller. From Nebraska, former governor, Dave Heineman. And agribusinessman Charles Herbster. Herbster chaired the Ag Advisory Committee for the Trump campaign. And then from Iowa, there's agribusinessman Bruce Rastetter. From Georgia, former governor Sonny Perdue. And from Kansas, Governor Sam Brownback also being mentioned. And other names, though, that have come and gone, Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas quickly shot down a rumor that he'd been offered the job, saying he prefers to remain in the U.S. Senate. So some of the names that are making the list, at least on the website Politico, of who could move into that corner office of the headquarter building of USDA in Washington, D.C. Well, as we start next week's trade in the marketplace, a quick review of where we'll start. December wheat will start trading Monday at 395 3/4 after losing 7 cents a bushel yesterday. December corn will start the week at 387 1/2 after dropping a penny a bushel yesterday. January soybeans, though, will start at $10.46 a bushel, after a 10.5 cent a bushel gain yesterday. Livestock futures also ended the week on a strong note. A totally green screen there. The December lean hog contract ending at a nickel over $51 a hundredweight. That was a gain yesterday of $1.47. December live cattle will start trading next week at $110.75 after gaining $1.05 yesterday. And January feeder cattle gained $2.07. We'll start the trade Monday at $127.22 a hundredweight. So all in all, not a bad Thanksgiving trading week, as I said earlier, for Wall Street and for livestock and grain futures. Well, I talked yesterday briefly about the many things for which I'm thankful. Another thing for which I'm thankful are great staff of engineers, including Bob Ferguson at WGN, who twirls the dials every Saturday morning and makes sure that I get down the barbed wire fence from Huntley to Chicago. Thanks to all of you for your fine work. And we're at the 6 o'clock mark on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.